Hello, it's a great pleasure to be here today and see such a strong turnup. It's always a fascinating topic for me to be talking about privacy, and I hope that by the end of the session that you too will share my both enthusiasm and commitment to it, and I'm probably sure that many of you do already. Now, I'll let you read that as I just make some additional points. One of the things that few of us realise is that 1975, New South Wales was the second jurisdiction in the world to introduce privacy legislation. Sweden was the first in 1973. That's a very significant initiative when you think that we're talking about not a country, but a state that's inside a nation. One of the other significant sort of historical things to keep in mind here, particularly for people such as yourselves with your professional area, is that in 1992, ICAC had an inquiry into the improper use of personal information by government agencies. That was a very significant inquiry, which led to a review of the 1975 legislation that actually saw in 1998 the two pieces of legislation which I point to up here. First one, the Privacy and Personal Information Protection Act, 98, known to us all as PIPIPA, and then later the Health Privacy Act in 2002. Health privacy is a particularly sensitive area and one which sort of warrants particular legislation as to its own. New South Wales is somewhat different to other jurisdictions, say Victoria, where health privacy is not the responsibility of the Privacy Commissioner. My jurisdiction tends to be different to yours. I do cover the New South Wales public sector, but in addition, I cover the private health sector, particularly those that provide health services or those organisations above a certain size that hold health information. You'll see that I'm an independent statutory officer. I report direct to the Parliament, and the legislation which is listed there ascribes to me certain functions which are my responsibility. Last two points there. You would be dealing as record managers, I would imagine, in the information management space. But privacy is not just solely information-based. It also has that component of the right to be left alone. And this is one of the very important areas which is growing at the moment as a result of technology. The right to solitude. And it's really being expressed very much in the materials that are occurring, either not necessarily in terms of direct inquiries to us inside my office, which is inside the Information and Privacy Commission, but also in terms of parliamentary inquiries. And there was one that most recently came down on the 3rd of March, which recommended to the government a statutory cause of action for serious invasions of privacy. Thanks, Jeff. However, some of the areas where, you know, we have, as I've mentioned before, the privacy legislation, and in addition, obviously, to the State Records Act, in terms of those particular areas, you know, where there's other legislation which needs to take into account privacy. I also mentioned the Cornwall's legislation there at the bottom, because in the private health sector, there is overlapping jurisdiction. My professional background has had a very large component which is to do with governance, and that's both in terms of my role inside Premier's Department, but also after I left Premier's Department in my private work. And there I was involved very heavily with audit and risk committees and similar other activities. When I came into the privacy role, I found that it wasn't necessarily as well integrated into the overall organisational governance arrangements as it should be, but also too, it wasn't capturing the benefits of mainstreaming privacy. It sort of seemed to be something over there, something which was a province of legal officers, whereas to my view, and the approach I bring to this role, is that privacy is everyone's business, if you'll excuse the pun on everyone's business, because it's like occupational health and safety. It's not just the role of a unit over there. It's, you know, we all have responsibility to make sure that the workplace is safe, and that's the same for privacy. where we are protecting the personal information of citizens. Underneath the New South Wales legislation, personal information can include such things as fingerprints, images, things that you, of course, would be aware of in your role. But it does not include information, personal information of someone who's been deceased for more than 30 years, or publicly available information, and there's some other exemptions in there as well. I put up to people that good governance is not just an issue of being compliant with legislation. It's about professional excellence, but also it's about meeting expectations of those in the community. And frequently legislation lags behind community expectations and community standards. Now, you of course are aware of information as an organisational asset, so I won't stress that point. One of the things though that I do want to make a distinction between, and I'm using here people who have written on this issue before me, and I point to the then New South Wales Ombudsman's report in 2009 on open government, where he made a distinction between government information on one hand and personal information on the other hand. And he was saying that personal information, and particularly access to it, should be the province of privacy legislation, not all legislation, because it's an issue that he thought was introducing organisational concerns. And if you want to refer to that, I recommend that you do. I won't go into that in greater detail. Thanks, Jeff. Now, some of the points I wanted to make here, obviously, as records managers, you're concerned with each of the stages where information is created, so it's collected, it's stored, you get access and accuracy issues, you get use and you get disclosures. Now, privacy attempts to assign the rights to privacy under each of those sorts of headings. So the legislation is principle-based, and when it's dealing with information management, as distinct from the broader concept of privacy, it seeks to address each of those areas. So we have, for example, underneath the PIPA Act, principles which relate to how information is collected. People must know, what it's going to be used for. It has to be lawful. We then move around to it's got to be stored securely, issues which are very relevant to records managers. But the information needs to be accurate, and people need to be able to access it. And obviously here, I need to address this sort of myth that people have about privacy, and that is that, well, it's more private if you don't record it. That's not the view of privacy advocates. If you don't know what is kept about you, you don't have the right to actually understand your right to get it corrected. And so underneath privacy legislation, not only do you have the right to access information and to see what's held on you, but you also have the right to have it corrected. That may not necessarily be what mean at all by destroying a record, but having the ability to place on top of it a correction or a note as to why the individual believes it's not correct. Use and then disclosure are other issues there. And as I point out, record keeping is obviously closely related to all stages, not just of the information cycle, but also of privacy principles. Jeff and I were talking earlier about privacy by design, and essentially what we're talking about there is good planning, knowing what's coming over the top of the hill before you get hit by something. Trying to move from a reactive approach to a proactive, being aware of it, understanding the risks, and planning for those. Now, privacy by design, that term, was something which was adopted internationally through the work of the Ontario Privacy Commissioner, Dr. Anna Kazukia. It was adopted in 2010 by the International Conference of Privacy Commissioners and Data Protection Commissioners. One of the things which goes very much with privacy by design approaches is that you know your risks. And in the privacy space, we talk about privacy impact assessments. All of us over the years, we've been working very conscious of the need for risk registers, and that's essentially what this is. What is the risk to privacy and then you actually plan how you're going to address those issues. Now, in terms of the Data Analytics Centre, just to bring it back to some of the matters I'm sure Ian was speaking about this morning, is that we have a really productive working relationship with Ian and the DAC. And for any of those who might have sort of been following the debates in Parliament when the bill was passed, would be aware that what Hansard records about the adoption of the New South Wales privacy framework, there was not an amendment to it, it was adopted. So that brings to the DAC that it works inside the existing context of privacy legislation. One of the things which we're looking to do with the DAC is to produce guidelines for agencies as to how they might prepare data which goes forward, which meets both the needs and the aims of the DAC, but also does it in a way which is compliant and respectful of community expectations about the data that might be transferred. This is a real, very important issue. With the advent of so much technology in recent years, when the Act came in 1998, such things as iPads, iPods weren't on the market. So technology has had a very significant impact upon the way that people feel about privacy, the way they use their technology and how much information they share. One of the myths that is out there, well, you see what people, said to me, you see what people put on social media, what they put on Facebook. They obviously don't care about privacy. I have to say to you that nothing is further from the truth. Research is now showing, and this is historical research, that people are actually becoming so much more conscious of what happens and what the adverse consequences that can happen when you overshare or you don't have security settings in place. And so those issues about concern and what do people think are the most risks to their own privacy, social media is way up there. I think too, I just like to make the point that there's always an issue about psychology, and you can never forget this, particularly in the privacy space. And that comes back to the most practical thing. What I might choose to put up on there on the internet is a very different thing to how I feel about it when someone else puts it up there without my consent or without my knowledge. So we just need to be aware that we're dealing with people, and we aren't necessarily always the most rational of people. So what I put up there is one thing, but if you put exactly the same thing up there about me, you might expect that there is a different reaction. Because of the Privacy Act, we know this as privacy commissioners or anyone who sort of works in the privacy space is what's called as a BOPTA, B-O-P-T-A. Because of the Privacy Act, I can't do this and I can't share that, and it's okay if I do this because who cares about privacy? Or the Act doesn't allow it. That is one of the most prevalent uses that people will use as a shield. Whether it's because they don't have the money or they don't want to share the data because they know that essentially its accuracy is not reliable, it might be out of date, or because there's legacy systems involved, which makes it actually very difficult. Or there are different models which are operating in people's minds, the health model versus the so-called social model. There's a range of reasons why people say, well, we can't share information, but they will point to the Privacy Act as the reason why they cannot. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the other myths out there is that if you're a privacy conscious person, you don't want things to be recorded. I hope that through the course of my discussion today, I've actually laid that one to rest as well. It's really just going back to that issue of community expectations can sometimes go ahead of legislation. So as people are becoming more conscious about their privacy, one of the 2013 research done by the Federal Privacy Commissioner, and this is reputable research, with a representative sample randomly selected, showed that 96% of Australians expect to be advised if their information goes missing, there is a breach, they want to know. We don't, however, have mandatory breach notifications, certainly not in the New South Wales privacy legislation. It is expected to be introduced federally very shortly, this year, as I understand it. And so that's sort of one of the reasons why we just say that, yes, the law is there, and that's what needs to be, you know, as the guiding point, but also be aware that there might be a difference with the way that individuals react if their information is used in a way which is different to their expectations. And this just comes back once again to the governance issues here. You know, privacy is now very, very dominant in boardrooms around Australia. That's because there's been a lot of change in the federal privacy legislation, but also too, the number of multinationals which now exist, and they're aware of things which have been occurring in Europe, in the US, about privacy, that there's a much greater consciousness upon it. One of the things which now occurred in the private sector was the Target breach, which is something like, and I think this is the figure, so I'll be brave, and something in the order of something like 60 million records were hacked and breached. Within 2 weeks, Target's share price had halved, and they're still counting the cost of that. Just the financial charges alone, with replacement of all of the sort of credit card requirements that go with that, was in the order of 252 million and still climbing. And that's after 2 years. So it's a, you know, where the dollars are makes issues very significant. In the public sector, the most obvious example that I can point to is in New Zealand, where the Accident Compensation Commission had a very significant privacy breach, which were records relating to individuals that were inadvertently and released to the public, and someone then, there was a media strategy around it, and it became a very controversial issue. Many people were affected by that, their employment prospects and the credibility and the reputation of that organisation. That was a very profound consequence to the organisation. So that's why we say, lead, you know, just be conscious of it. Don't just rely upon reacting that people don't care. I think that it's better to think ahead and to be ahead of particular issues which are now just starting to come forward. One of the tools which, you know, I was very keen to introduce for everybody in the New South Wales public sector was really what are the things that you need to take into account? And people were saying to me when I got into this job and I was meeting with, you know, managers, CEOs, and, you know, audit and risk committees. Privacy is so hard. There's so many things you need to know about. And I certainly took on board that, you know, for whatever reason, lack of resources, not necessarily being having a finger on the pulse with what's happening in terms of managers, it wasn't easy to understand all of the things that you needed to take into account when you were seeking to manage privacy. So we put together this tool, which, you know, tries to address the things which need to catch up inside a governance framework. So about leadership, the structures, the processes, the accountability, and the reporting. And on each quadrant, when your cursor hovers on that, we bring up the things which are relevant, and it's probably a bit blurred down the back there, but for example, underneath, you know, leadership and governance, we have a copy of the various pieces of privacy legislation, the PIPR Act, the regulations that go with that, the privacy codes of practice, which modify the applications, the principles, the public interest directions, and then we do that all the way around up to some of the other acts which have to be taken into account. And for example, underneath the Annual Reports Act, when you have an internal review of a privacy complaint which goes through privacy legislation, you have to report it in your annual report. Now we're amending that to take into account the health privacy legislation and the resources we have there. But one of the things which I'm very interested to learn about, and I was hoping that that might be something you might raise with me today so that we can build it into our work program, is where there are gaps for people such as yourself that we should take into account and that we can seek to assist you. Because as I was saying earlier, you know, this is a job for all of us, not just for privacy commissioners and regulators. something which all of us have a responsibility to do, whether it's in our professional life, but also taking that over into our personal life.
Yeah, please.